Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a Louis C.K. themed round of blah, blah, blah. And now, he observed Veterans Day by still not getting an answer as to why his Uncle Ralph had the last name Carollo. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. We love the fact that you share the show with your friends and family and colleagues. It's a good story. That's what we rely on. Good seeing you, Gina Grad.
Good to see you.
And Bald Brian.
Hell yeah.
The original Carollo.
Yeah, I would say what I'm learning in life is the biggest insult is passivity and or just kind of being just, huh? Like, yeah. Again, go back to junior high. You know, you'd much rather, as a guy, you'd much rather you pick Lori Kovacs. She's the hottest in junior high. What'd she think of Adam Carolla? She can't stand him. She said she was a creep. All of that is way better than, huh?
Who?
Who? No, Alan who? Carolla sits behind you in math. I don't think anyone's behind me in math.
Seriously, it was a good thing that I got.
Not Brian Bishop. Yeah,
that was actually a compliment.
It's better than who.
I think you're right.
And
Brian who? There's another Brian in this class.
And there's a lot of stories about, you know, oh, my dad, he'd make us pick out a switch and beat us with it, or he'd do that, you know, he'd come home from the track and he'd be drunk, and he'd insist we all go to Denny's and order three Moons over Miami. I think Grand Slams or whatever. Better.
Both good.
Ponuses.
Either way.
At least that's a story. The who? That's like... When I said to my dad, the two who's were, how come no middle name? And he's like, who? Huh? What? How come I don't have a middle name? Oh.
You don't?
I don't know.
Did you ask your mom?
Yeah, that's literally his thing. And my mom had the same answer. It's the worst quality to have in a parent. It's better to have alcoholic who's like, I'm going to beat some sense into that kid. Yeah. He's gonna learn to do his homework. Or the guy, anything than what?
Who?
And when I said to my...
Constantly passing the uninterested buck back right, and forth.
When I said to my... Dad, when he presented me, he gave me, when Uncle Ralph died, he gave me the flag and his purple heart.
Oh, wow.
And I looked down and said, Ralph Carollo. And I said, this your brother, your older brother? He's like 3 years older? Yeah. Suppose he went by Carollo his whole life? Uh-huh. Mm. How come? I don't know. It's like, wow, you guys must have been really thick as thieves.
I was going to say.
Could you imagine you have a brother that's 2.5 years older than you and he goes by a slightly different last name and it's never come into question?
Did you know him, Ralph?
Well, I knew my dad.
Uncle Carollo?
My dad had two brothers, Ralph and Mario. And because of their white privilege, they never left South Philly. Okay.
Oh, Southies.
They just sat around bathing in
on
their white
stoops.
Privilege. In South, I like an idea of an airplane ticket was like crazy. Long distance phone was like, I remember you're on the long distance phone call, you're on the clock.
Yeah, that's time.
Like, literally. Oh, yeah. Like, let's go. Wrap
if someone
it up.
Wanted to make a long distance call, you're like, eh, keep it to under 5 minutes. Oh, or, you know, whatever it was.
Around here, we grew up in the 818. You want to call over to the 213, you're on the clock. Or like literally, like guys putting a quarter down, like on top of your desk. Like, here you go. Mm-hmm. So he never left South Philly. His other brother, Mario, never left South Philly. And my dad never left North Hollywood. And we never left North Hollywood. He couldn't buy an airplane ticket or anything. There were a couple of like, you know, those weird, uncomfortable conversations when you're 14. We're like, your Uncle Ralph's on the phone just on Christmas.
Right.
You know, Christmas
Say
night.
Hi.
How you doing, Adam? Is it good? How you doing, Ralph?
Attempting good. To recap the year.
Keeping up with your studies? You know, like, whatever. It's like, no, I'm failing horribly at everything.
I'm a Corolla. Like, come on.
Yeah, like, okay, all right, put your dad back on. And he'd talk for 10 seconds and then hang up. And then we do that again the next year. Like, a lot of that. Nobody knew anybody. Nobody sure. hung out with anybody. Nobody made time for anybody. Nobody cared.
The reason I asked is I wonder if he was, you know, like an early adopter of separating himself from the Corolla name from the family.
Oh, shame.
Yeah, he's like, I get it right away. That's I'm getting away from this.
He did have, I don't think he had any kids. He had some moderate success as, I don't think he made any real money, but he had a job that was kind of cool, which
You'd
was...
stop a job.
He was, yeah, for the Corollas. He was a photographer for the city of Philadelphia.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's something.
Yeah, it was. He would take pictures of 76ers games, or if the mayor was having a banquet, you know, his pictures where they're shaking hands, you know, at the
cool.
banquet.
Groundbreaking, you know,
with the ribbon cutting.
He took those pictures, I guess. So he'll be missed.
So lots of artists in the family.
Yeah, yeah. So that's him, and he went by a different last name, but we're not quite sure why, because we don't sweat the details.
And we never will be.
Now, speaking of families and success, I had an interesting... There's an interesting thing for you guys. I'm interested in success, and I'm also very interested in the lack of success, and also how people fight it off, and how far... You know, as we get older, and then as you have family members that are older, and friends that start getting older, and folks, you know, relations, you start really realizing, oh, this person's taking this to the grave, like this horrible quality or this thing that stands in the way of him or her having success, this thing. I have one that's a big one for a lot of people in their life. It's a big issue. And I'll tell it to you in a second. First, I'll tell you about hymns. Want to look good for the holiday photos? How about this holiday party hookups? Hymns, new wellness brand for men who don't normally go to the doctor. And that was me when I was a younger dude, man. And I don't mean 19. I mean 29, 30, 31. I didn't have a doctor, and I didn't have Hymns either. So it's one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, and more. FDA-approved medical products, personalized recommendations, and confidential online consultations with a licensed doctor. See, this is like, I don't know, Uber. Well, you know I love Uber just because it's the free market and it's just...
I need a ride. You want to give me a ride?
Right, yeah. Right. I need this. You got that. I don't want to go wait in line at the clinic. My listeners get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair. And if your hair, sorry, Brian, is going, you got to get in. You got to get in. You got to get in. And hair is always weird to me because I can't figure it out. Why does it go when I see guys that are 23 or 19 and
14.
It's starting to go 14? Like, why?
Cases.
Nothing else goes on.
Right.
I'm more confused by 23 than I am at 14 because at least like puberty kicked in and something happened.
Something. Yeah.
When you're 26 and nothing's going on, like at 26,
you're the prime of your life.
Yeah, you're just going, I'm going to make it till 40 and then things will start changing again. No, hair's going to start falling out.
Lazy follicles.
Lazy follicles in the sand. No, wait.
In
the wine. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, my listeners get a free trial. That's right. Try it out. Actually, it's a $67 value for just $5. Try it out for just $5 while supplies last. Check their website for full details. So if your hair is starting to thin out, jump on it before you go full bald Brian. Oh. Also, you can go to
be so lucky
forhims.com/Adam, and that is forhims.com/Adam. Check that out. They'll give you all kinds of deals, supplements. You can get hold of a doctor for hims.com/Adam. Okay.
The quality.
So I was sitting around, I was talking to a friend of mine, dad, yesterday. Dad's dead, mom's still alive. And I said, what's your mom into? Like, she got stuff. I'm kind of interested in this thing where it's like, look, you have X amount of hours left on the planet. Are you doing what you'd like to do? Are you out? And he said, well, she likes painting. She's a really good painter, and she likes horses, and she likes painting horses. So I said, not pictures of horses, physically painting horses, getting a weenie roll around.
Yeah, right.
We're going to turn you into a pinto. And I said, oh, okay, so does your mom paint, and she paint horses? And he said, no. And I said, why not? He said, I asked her. I said, Mom, you love painting. You're good at painting. You're like retired. You love horses. I want you to sit down and paint some horses. And she said, no, step-husband or stepfather and second husband, Roy would make fun of me, her response.
Didn't see that coming.
And I thought, first off, I don't know if he would, but secondly, that's kind of up to you, not up to him. And then thirdly, why do we live with so many people who would make fun of whatever endeavor we wanted to get into? Like, you slam heroin, we don't make fun of you. You want to paint, we make fun of you. What is that? You want to learn to play the clarinet, we make fun of you. You get on oxycodone, we don't make fun of you.
We get a circle of your best loved ones, tell you how loved you are.
To try to encourage you. we make a lasagna, and we get a bunch of people around, and we tell you how special you are to us in our life. But if you want to learn to speak a second language, we make fun of you.
Total
you
know, jerk.
Two-language guy.
That's a great point.
You want to start your own business, we make fun of you. Yeah. You want to paint a horse, we make fun of you. Yeah, but you bottom out on drugs or gambling, we get all your friends together to build you up and tell you what a great dad you are. So it's a kind of ass backwards approach to life. But either way, he announced that the husband would make fun of her. Mm-hmm. And then this is the part I'm interested in. He said, I think maybe if I talk to the stepdad, if I talk to him, I might be able to get him to set up like a easel or something for her, like do something in the basement, nice. Little arts and crafts room. Then he paused and he said, as long as I make it his idea.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And
a
I
lot
thought,
of that.
That's a pretty popular thing. Yeah. Like I could remember, there's a blue collar and a white collar version. I remember one of the first things came out of Jimmy Kimmel's mouth is, it was pretty clear that nobody wanted Jimmy and I together on the air except for me and Jimmy. Kevin and Bean were sort of agnostic about it. Like, they were like, you guys are funny. I don't know. But we don't want to get into trouble. Right. So maybe no. Mm-hmm. And the program director and the GM and nobody else wanted us on together. Right. Somehow it was too controversial or something. And we realized we're like the only two in the building who wanted to be on together. Like, he could do his sports, I could do my segment, but not together. And we, of course,
combustible,
wanted...
Combustible, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, we wanted to be together on there, the man show. So, and Crank Anchors and whatever else. So,
and Life Partners.
That's right. So, he said to me, look, the way to get this thing on, or the way to get our bit on, or the thing on, is we got to make it seem to the program director like it was his idea. If we make it his idea, he's going to love it, you know? And I thought, yeah, it works. It's at all levels. But this notion of if it's not your idea, then it's rejected.
Yeah, that's right. It's dismissed.
I have no idea why anyone would go through life that way. I understand you have a horrible problem with your ego. The best ideas. But now, it's your marriage. It's your radio station. It's your painting of horses. Or it's your architecture. It's your whatever. Use everyone's idea and then you live in the house. Yeah. I frequently walk people. When I'm building a house, I walk everyone through it. What do you think? 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 And I cherry pick every idea everyone has.
And then when you show it off later, people think less of you. And you're like, oh, that was someone else's idea. That was I got that from.
That was all
they think
Ray.
A lot less of you. Yeah.
It never factors in. No one wants to know anything other than cool house. And that's it. I will worry, and then people go, yeah, but you know people's ego. What about people's ego? What about somebody gives you a joke or tells you this would be funnier or better or what? Whatever. Whatever it is. Vinny Tortorich telling you about your diet. Like, whatever. Yeah. Take everyone's ideas for everything.
The end result is you. Yeah. Telling the joke, or fitting into the jeans, whatever it is. It's you.
Now, I don't like to label myself a hero.
Well.
Do it this one.
All right, just this one.
If it's warranted, we'll let you know.
The Corollos don't like to talk about the Corollos. But I started thinking to myself, 2 days earlier, I completely flopped on an idea that was mine that I was completely and utterly in love with. And I'll give you a little backstory. So I decided it'd be interested. Get ready, Gary, with the singer stuff. Or actually your bone stock 9/11. I thought to myself, I started having these feelings about, I'd like to build a car. I went to SEMA, and when you go to SEMA, you see everyone in their builds. All the builders around the country that come and they bring their build to the, they work on the car for 2 years, and then they literally unveil it at SEMA, and they do their builds. Now, what I do is I restore old race cars, but I don't do build. Not a custom build of mine. This stuff was built in the 70s or the 80s or the 60s, and I just put it back to exactly how it was. And I guess it could be like, instead of going into your Craftsman-style Pasadena house from 1919 and refurbishing it, which is its own challenge and reward and everything else, I'd like to build my own house with a clean sheet of paper. It'll be all my design. And I had that thought. I thought, I'd like to build. Now, just so you guys know, in this world, it's kind of an interesting world. There's a company called Singer, and they do the coolest Porsche 911s ever. But about 10 years ago, I was up on Mulholland doing a photo shoot with somebody for some magazine article or something, and a guy pulled in his highly modified Porsche, and he was explaining to me that he was starting a business where they took these Porsches that were then $15,000-$20,000, and they completely redid them and sold them for $250,000. And it was like, that sounded like the worst business idea ever, because people pay $250,000 for a Ferrari, but not for a $20,000 car that you did a bunch of cool things to. That company, Singer, their cars now sell for $400,000-$500,000. There's like a 5-year waiting list, and they're the coolest cars on the planet. That guy was able to take his passion that with no business model, it seemed insane, and turn it into
cottage industry.
People waiting in line and paying $500,000.
Yeah, I think you've showed us pictures of those cars before. They're pretty cool.
Right. And so the idea is you take this stock thing. Gary's got a stock one there. Just a basic stock car, although he chose a Targa for some reason, but okay. And nothing. And then you turn it into this Singer thing, which we'll show you, which is completely different. I got the same Targa. Good call, Gary. Oh, but you didn't go Targa on them. All right. Anyway, beautiful. Every single detail, everything. So it sounds fun. Sounds like a challenge. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not the Porsche guy, but I'm kind of the Datsun guy. So instead of a 911, I'll start with a Z car. A 240Z or 280ZX or something. That'll be my jumping off point, and then I'll do all these super cool innovative things to it. And I thought, this is like just literally like 4 days ago, just walking the dog, thinking, and I thought, you gotta start with a cool power plant, a cool engine.
Okay.
And the idea is,
you're sourcing all the things from other cars or similar cars.
It's like a lot of the stuff you got to fabricate on your own. A lot of stuff you look at other cars for influences and things you like. Cues could be a Ferrari from the 60s, whatever it is. But here are the cues, and here's what other people have done, and here's what I wouldn't do, but here's what I do want to do. And I think the kind of the plan is, let's not do something that's been done before or a lot.
Okay.
And I thought, what's the power plant going to be? Now, the Z cars came with a inline straight six, all six cylinders straight.
Okay.
Not a V configuration, not the flat, just straight six. I said, all right, so getting the normal engine and putting a turbocharger on it or something has all been done a million times. Not interesting. So then you think engine swaps. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, maybe a Chevy V8 engine or something like that. And you go, everyone's done that. It's been that done a million times. And then you think, well, maybe another Japanese Nissan engine with a twin cam something something from a something something. But that's all kind of been done a lot as well. Yes.
Would it make any sense to go electric, or that would just not make any sense because of the way the car is configured?
Gerbil power.
Electric is cool.
Thank you.
But it's kind of its own thing, yeah. And it's not really my expertise, and it's not necessarily, it's like SEMA, you want to pop the hood, show the power plant in there. The engine is so much of that. A fair idea for down the road, but for now, I think it's just, I'm looking for a power plant.
Okay.
And I'm kind of thinking, what is a cool power plant? Like, what have I seen? What engines would fit? Blah, blah, blah. And I thought to myself, Jaguar, vintage Jaguar. They made a 3.8. They made a 4.2. I see them in all these race cars at the vintage races. They're straight six, which keeps the same configuration, mm-hmm. but they're twin overhead cam. Gary will show you a picture. And they're beautiful. Oh, they're like Swiss watches. They're just great looking. They got the side draft Webers and they got this gold head on them, which is cool with the twin cams and everything else. And then I thought to myself, I was immediately in love. I was smitten with myself.
Your own idea?
Smitten. Smitten with me.
Next book.
Yep. And I was like calling a few of my car buddies and I go, I've got it. I've got the engine, the Jag, the best looking engine ever, the best looking inline engine, the inline six, just like the Z car had, but this is a Jag. And we'll take this thing to the car shows and see them and we'll ask everybody, guess what's in the power line? And they'll never guess. No one ever guessed a Jag engine. No one's ever done the Jag and it'll fit. And it's amazing.
It's an inline six.
Great engine and it's an inline six. And this is awesome. And it's got twin cams, and I'm starting talking about we'll do separate throttle bodies, and we'll have the big trumpets, and blah, blah, blah. Ooh. I'm getting excited. I'm getting very excited, and I'm announcing that not only am I excited, but I'm excited genius, a smitten genius. Nobody else who has this creativity. That's why they call you Ace, you know, because nobody else would ever think of this crazy Jag motor inside of the Z. It's going to be awesome. Awesome. And, I'm announcing it to anyone I can announce it to. And then the next day, I come into the shop. Sean, over at the shop, is a small, very quiet, mild-mannered Armenian guy who can bend metal and do anything with metal and make shape anything and fabricate anything. And he just sits at that shop all day putting these race cars back together. Very quiet guy. And I walked into the shop, and he's the guy who's going to basically build the car. And I said, Sean, are you ready to have your mind melted?
He said, okay.
With the best idea ever. And he said, yeah. And I said, you know the Z car we're building, the Super Z car? Yeah. Power plant, 4.2, inline six Jag motor, twin overhead cams, big valves, big gold head. Maybe we'll do a side draft, like a Weber induction, triple Weber induction.
Now you sound like Megan Fox in Transformers.
Yes. And he went, okay, that sounds good. And I said, okay. And then, like quiet and humble guys do, he went, I had a different idea. I said, well, couldn't possibly be as good as this one.
Get ready for second place.
Now, this guy, he has a small block V8 Chevy GM engine that's at the shop that he's going to put in another car. So it's like he's one of these swap the crate engines. That's a V8 run of the mill. Get it off a shelf in Detroit and put it in some other car. Engine swap. So I'm thinking, okay, that's where this guy, he's going with this. He wants a V8, you know, whatever from a Corvette. I'm thinking, boring, boring.
That's my Jag idea.
I'm pre-bored. And he goes, so I had another idea. And I was like, well, I guess out of common decency, I should let you express it to me. But
tell
I'm going to quickly poo-poo it and move on to my idea, the greatest idea ever, the Jag engine. And he goes, what if we put this engine in the car, and he pointed at a picture of this engine, which Gary can pop up there, which is this crazy Nissan V8 that is one of one that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. And I happen to own three of these engines because if you watch the Winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman, you will see in the doc at a certain point, they built Newman. Look at this crazy engine. We'll put up at amcarol.com. It's a V8 with a big intake, high velocity. Oh, high rise. High rise intake, Bri Bri.
You're telling me.
Yeah. No, tell Megan.
No,
yeah. Yeah, and it had twin turbos on it, made 933 horsepower. It was a crazy, crazy, crazy engine that was put into a Paul Newman Z car, and everyone complained. That's the car, which I own, came with extra engines. So they
and you quietly muttered,
I don't know about that. Z cars came with a straight six. Did I talk about that before?
It's come up once or twice.
Come up. Yeah, they put a V8 from Japan. They didn't have any V8s out here in the 70s, the 80s. No Japanese car to V8. Okay. They went to Japan, and they got a V8 from a limousine, and then they did put two turbochargers on. They built this crazy 1,000-horsepower motor, and they put it in the Z car, and of course, everyone else complained because you got rules, and you're not supposed to be running different engines and doing everything else. And they unveiled it at, I don't know, Brainerd or Pocono or wherever, and Paul Newman put it on the pole. He qualified the car on the pole, and all the other guys with all the Porsches and all everything all complained. And Bob Sharp said, Paul Newman just put this car on the pole, and we got a ton of attention around here because Paul Newman put this thing on the pole, and you guys are complaining that he had a unfair advantage or whatever it is. You should be thanking me that you're getting all this press now and you're getting all this crowds and everything. If Paul Newman wins the race in this car, then we'll talk. If it's on the pole, that's just an extra press for everyone. And I think the car ended up breaking. Had an interesting, Newman drove it for like in 1980 and 81 and for a few years, crazy, scary, fire-breathing car. And then he was out. There are three of these engines on the planet. They don't exist. The reason they don't exist because Bob Sharp built this engine for this race car back then, bottom half from Japan, top half from America.
It wasn't production or anything.
Nothing. There's nothing like it. It should be at the Nissan Motorsport Museum. And when Sean pointed at it and said, you know, we own that engine, and that went in a Z way back when, and that's a Japanese V8 racing engine, I think that engine should go in the car. And my first impulse was like, nice try, but...
Wait,
damn
what?
It, you're right. Like, oh my God, he's right.
I don't know about that.
And it took about four. I had to like, it was
and
like.
And your jag idea is floating away.
It was beyond your grasp.
But it was like turning, it's like turning a large ship around.
Yeah.
It took a little bit. Like it wasn't a skateboard kickflip and zip around. It was like, well, but.
Cranking the wheel.
Cranking around. And I literally just went, oh my God, it's the best idea ever. And we're the only ones who could do it. Because we're the only ones who own that engine, and there is no chance of anybody ever have doing it in the past because no one else ever owned the engine.
Yeah.
We own the engines. And I went, my God, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And I didn't have an ounce of ego other than I was excited because I was going to save myself $40,000 on a Jag engine that I didn't own and save myself on this. And I immediately started getting, we got to take those motors. We got to break them down. I don't know what kind of shape they're in, blah, blah, blah.
You got to dock his pay, though, somehow, for showing you up.
We fast forward to a year from now. He's like, remember I had that great idea for SEMA?
I'm just saying.
Make it think it's his idea.
Everybody just, this notion of we're going to talk you into it, make you think it's your idea, or it shall be rejected if it's not your idea. Why would you possibly go through life that way with everybody else and all their ideas?
It's a very self-defeating attitude or setup for life.
Well,
because you're limiting yourself to one set of millions of ideas, potentially.
I know, but everyone's defense of that is, they want their ego. And it's like, they drive a Tercel and they live in an apartment and they're 51 years old. Like, what ego? What ego? The best, whether it's, when people go, hey, you got to respect me. The best respect ever is you just climb out of a nice car
wearing a nice watch and walking your nice house. Success. That's all. No one has to say anything. Yeah. Don't pull up in your Tercel and demand that I respect you or cling to your ideas. As a matter of fact, I can make a really strong argument for your ideas not working based on
life.
Your bank account, which doesn't exist, and your apartment.
Yeah. Your argument is just pointing at the Tercel. Yes. You know what I think? You just shake your head and point at the Tercel.
Well, I'm just saying, like, this guy lives somewhere outside, you know, somewhere in Illinois, and is probably on disability or not making a ton of dough. Why does things need to be his idea?
Weighted,
what history does he have of making insanely astute observations and decisions?
Isn't that a Reagan quote? It's something like, you'd be surprised how much you can accomplish when you don't care who takes the credit.
Yeah. If it's not good enough.
It's, good like,
it's just a good way to go. And believe me, it always comes back to you. It's your car. It's your house. It's right. your whatever. Someone else's idea doesn't matter. I would tell people, I am very sort of resolute about it in that if somebody has a joke and I tell it, I always have to tell people that it's someone else's joke. And I don't normally tell other people's jokes, but one comment that Jimmy Kimmel made once, we're talking about all these cupcake places, this is about 10 years ago, all these cupcake places were popping up everywhere, all these high-end cupcake
Sprinkles,
places.
Crumbs.
Right, right. And I said, what the hell is going on with cupcakes? Who decided we needed cupcakes? I had a cupcake at a kid's birthday party when I was 9, and then I never needed another cupcake because we have pie and strudel and pussy. Why do we need cupcakes? There's many things to eat. They're delectable.
Yeah, there's a whole list.
There's a whole list, and cupcake ain't on it, but somehow now I turn 41 and I need to reintroduce myself to cupcake. I said to Jimmy, what's all the cupcake places popping up everywhere? He said, you notice one pops up every time a new pot dispensary pops up. They're like literally on top of each other. And I was like, oh yeah, it's all the pot places. People walking out of the pot place going, I need some cupcakes now. And it made me laugh. And when I would do radio interviews or something, and this is back when all this was in the news about the pot dispensaries and blah, blah, blah. And people go, hey, what's going on in your neck of the woods, the pot, whatever. And I would tell the joke, and the DJs would always laugh, and I'd go, that's Jimmy Kimmel's joke. And they would laugh again. It's not like they took back their laugh or thought,
oh, you didn't.
Oh, you're not
who you were.
So you're presenting yourself as entertaining.
Hey, we're out of time. Not a role can be seen anywhere but here again.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. We got blah, blah, blah. We got a couple of phone calls up there. Let me talk to Pete, 31, Cincinnati. Pete?
Hey, Adam, Ball, Gina, how are you guys all doing?
Good, man.
Good. I'm sitting here drinking, watching football on a Sunday, watching the Bengals, and Vontaze Burfict just got ejected yet again.
I literally
That's
was
not the Vontaze I know.
I was literally just thinking about him and that Bengals game a few years back where he was running off the field, like throwing his helmet
up.
He
thought he'd ended the game with an interception, and turns out it wasn't the end.
How many games have Bill Belichick and the Patriots won over the last 14 years just because their team is so disciplined, so well coached? Like, just all those
of the team.
Crazy, stupid late hits on the quarterback. What's third and 13? And the ball sailed on. Oh, we got a roughing the quarterback. You know, new set of downs, moving into field goal. Yep. I mean, how many games, how many points have they got just through being insanely disciplined?
Fundamental. Yes. Yeah, it's what makes them the Patriots.
Go ahead, Pete. Sorry.
So, Burfict can't just get ejected. So, he did the whole thing where he's screaming at the opposing fans and ripped his jersey off, throws into the stands. And it got me thinking, that's one of those things, like, to do before you die. Like, you talk about having the knife in your mouth and diving into the water.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool to get ejected in a full stadium, rip your jersey off, and just throw it at the opposing fans.
Yeah, now you have to have a physique to back it up.
I was going
to
say.
You know what I mean?
There's a lot of things going against you on this one. Number one, it's not impossible. Unlikely you're going to play in a professional sporting event in a packed stadium at this point in your life.
Maybe it's a charity event.
I was going to say, we can hope for like a Rock and Jock situation,
celebrity charity.
Uh-huh.
Rock and Jock.
How about,
timely reference.
How about this? I did play in a Rock and Jock football game once.
Was the one on the beach with Marino, or is that something else I'm thinking of?
It was with Marino. It wasn't on the beach. Okay. It was like me and Jimmy, and it was up north, and I think it was in Seattle or Portland or something, and I have a couple memories of playing in the Rock and Jock, whatever, which is one thing. Tony Siragusa, before the game, was kicking 55-yard field goals. Which Gina, is
the,
crazy
the reason
to me.
This is crazy is because he's a gigantic 370-pound white guy who used to play like defensive line. He was a big fat
like
guy,
a wall.
Big run stopper,
big, fat defensive player.
He not only was he kicking field goals that were 50 yards, just screwing around before the game, but at some point went like just hauling ass down the field, like just running like for fun or whatever, and he was hauling ass. Like you're going like, oh my god, that guy's an athlete.
Yeah,
and that's
you forget these gigantic men that play, especially on even offensive line. These are athletes. You have to get to that level. Most of those guys can dunk
the
basketball.
There was another part in the game where Dan Marino played quarterback for both teams, and I could remember, and it's why you should never watch pro football and go, oh, come on, close the window, come on, get over there, come on, oh, come on, I could have covered that guy, or the DB that wasn't there. I was guarding my guy. I played a ton of DB, just defensive back, in a million pickup games, and did a fair all through Pop Warner High School and stuff like that. I played linebacker. But I didn't cover. I was covering my guy, and I was like covering him. I was kind of like shading him, and I was like, Marino was like 40 yards away, and I was like, all right, hope he throws it to him, because I'm going to slide in and pick this one
out.
And he threw it to him, but he threw it to him like a baseball, and there was nothing you could do about it. It was like he didn't put any air under it. He just threw it at the guy, and it was like, bam. And I was like, oh, there's nothing you can do.
Hall of Fame quarterback, probably 4 years after he retired, 4 to 6 years, whatever it was.
Nothing
still doing
you can
just
do.
Fine.
Maybe 2 years after he retired. I don't know, but there's
still
nothing you can do.
Shape.
There's nothing you can do. He throws lasers, and they don't loft up in the air, and you think they are because that's what you're used to, and not. Same token, by the way, I did a 20-yard down and a comeback. Basically, Dan just said, line up wide on the right, sprint out, stop, turn, come back, I'll hit you. And I ran like 15 yards, stop, turn, and sort of waited. And he did throw the BB, and the guy who was covering me was like a professional player or something, and he swatted it down. And I got back to the huddle, and Dan was pissed. Like, hey, I said come back. You gotta play the ball. You got to come back to the ball. You don't just wait for the ball to come to you. It wasn't even a comeback. It was a button hook. It was just like a 15-yard button hook. And he was pissed that I didn't come back to the ball. That's the DB guy.
He's explaining the route tree to him. He's like, don't you know your route tree?
It was incredible. Hey, Pete.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Yeah, man. All right. We got the, yes.
Just because there's no guest and we have a second, I don't know, Gary, if you can look this up on the fly, but the greatest public diss, I guess you would call it, of a team. Do you remember Sam Weiss, the old coach of the Cincinnati Bengals? The reason I thought of the Bengals coach. There was a game where people were throwing stuff on the field. It was like the Bengals and some random team, the Bengals and the Jets or whatever it was. And the Bengals fans were throwing stuff on the field and it messed up the game.
Sam had a bit of a kind of a drill instructor.
Yeah.
There are two types of coaches.
This is like
there's
late
kind of,
80s, early 90s.
There's some that like, oh, you never played. And then there's Sam Weiss, who looks like he played a lot.
So in a very rare move, Sam Weiss gets on the microphone during the game, like public address, like what they would sing.
He's
the national
at a home
anthem.
Game,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're in Cincinnati.
His fans are throwing stuff.
Why would they? Okay.
Because probably protest a referee call or something like that or whatever it was. And they're threatening to stop the game, threatening penalties, blah, blah, blah. And he gets on the mic, and if Gary can find it, it'll be better than what I am about to do. But he said something to the effect of, hey, listen, stop throwing stuff on the field. You're not in Cleveland. You're in Cincinnati. He dissed the team that wasn't even there. He dissed their rival, and they weren't even a part of the game. Imagine you're a Cleveland fan.
Hold it
you're like,
for,
what?
Hold it for a second. I know.
Watching your game versus the Steelers. Like, what?
I know. It's always great when you're thrown under the bus for something that someone else
and the crowd
is doing.
Went nuts. We should listen to it after you do your
thing. Oh, well.
That's great.
First, Simply Safe. They got a Black Friday sale coming up. Holidays can be crazy. Make sure your home and family are protected through all of it. Simply Safe Home Security is having a massive Black Friday sale. $200 off their special holiday security system. These guys are the best. Effortless, delivered right to your door. Free shipping, set it up in under an hour, peel and stick, get it all up and running. Dawson moved, got his new place now, took his Simply Safe system with him. Your home is completely protected around the clock. And there's no long-term lock-in contracts or hidden fees. Right now, you get $200 off at Simply Safe. You know, get it for yourself, but I don't know if your daughter's moving out, moving into a dorm room or apartment or something, going off to college or whatever it is. This is a great gift. SimplySafe.com/Adam. These systems will fly off the shelf, so we need to get going now. Offer ends soon. That's SimplySafe, two eyes in there, .com/Adam. Get it for yourself. Get it for someone you love. Well, listen to Sam Weiss.
Yeah. He's home, and they're
he's
playing.
Home.
They're playing someone else. Like, Cleveland's not involved at all.
Yeah, Cleveland's not involved. All right.
Will the next person that sees anybody throw anything onto this field, point them out, or get them out of here? You don't live in Cleveland. You live in Cincinnati.
The crowd goes nuts.
I love him.
You don't live in Cleveland. That's a great rivalry shot right there. Like, your team's not involved at all.
That's also good.
It's why everyone needs a dad. Because he straightened up a whole stadium.
Yeah, right, got him all on his side. Yep.
Nothing else hit the field. Yeah.
He literally did, he literally did a hey, like to 71,000 people and like got them to stop chucking bottles on the field. This is why
dad voiced him.
Whether it's the dog or the kids, like the, you know, you can hear like Lynette from the other room, like, Phil, no, don't, oh, he ate the slipper. Oh, no, Sonny, get him. Natalia, stop hitting Sonny. Stop it. Stop. No, we only have one slipper now. You can't hit Sonny with it. And they're just laughing and defying and laughing and defying. And then I'll come around the corner and go, hey, and everyone just like drops everything. And Phil will trot into his cage. Like, Phil will just, come around the corner and just go, hey! And everyone drops everything. And then Phil just will like put his head down and go trot, sit down in his cage. You need that at home. Sam White should do, hey! Like, to the stadium.
That's
I want to hear that again, Gary.
Dad
I really
voiced
like
him.
That. Yeah. He dad voiced him.
And please verify who's. Sorry, go ahead.
Will the next person that sees anybody throw anything onto this field, point them out, or get them out of here? You don't live in Cleveland. You live in Cincinnati.
Amazing.
Please verify they weren't playing the Browns, because I'm 99. I don't want to sound like an idiot, but I'm 99% sure they're playing just some other team.
Well, let me tell you, if they're not playing the Browns, it's great. If they are playing the Browns, it's kind of great, too. Like, it's still
Seahawks.
Great.
Seahawks. They're playing the Seahawks.
I love it. I love it.
So great.
Do you hear that dad voice jump?
Hey.
Coming a lot
through?
Of bass in there.
Right. It's good. You need the discipline, people. All right, one more, and then we'll do a little blah, blah, blah. Robert, 35, Hollywood Hills.
Yes, hello, Adam.
Yes.
Today, on Hollywood and Highland, they're having a hashtag Me Too, and hundreds of people are showing up. And
Hollywood and Highland. Highland.
See you guys later.
And you haven't spoken about the fact that you got Harvey Weinstein by Margaret Chow.
Cho.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, hashtag survivor, right?
Yeah.
This happened to you.
Wow, Robert.
It happened to the great Adam Carolla. So if it could happen to the great, if somebody could take advantage of the great Adam Carolla, it could happen to anybody.
I remember not feeling safe in my own home after she left.
Hashtag you too.
Mm-hmm.
How he loves them.
Yeah. I take almost everything as, oh boy, that person's got a problem. Not I've got a problem. I go, that person's got a problem.
Yeah, but weren't you humiliated?
No, I'm never humiliated. I'm never anything that other people do to me, really. I'll just decide myself, as I famously said
but
to my mom.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I know. That's what it's all about. I know. I had this conversation with my mom where she's like, if you were a black person and you saw one of those, how could you possibly not be affected by those statues? By not being affected. But how could you possibly not be? By not being affected. But how could you possibly? It's an awesome visit. It was an awesome visit.
Chicana studies major. To add injury to insult, then she said, the only reason Adam Carolla didn't want to have sex with me is because he thinks I'm too ugly. And then you're like, how does the victim then, you were the victim. You're like, how is this happening to me? I'm the one, this happened to me.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that a little more?
Oh, yeah, I can't. Yeah, maybe that was her thing. It was a million years ago. I think she was in the throes of some substance going on. And
hormones.
came over in the house and made a couple interesting decisions. That's all. I don't think of anything.
Flattering of anything.
Yeah.
I'm always flattered. If anyone's attracted to me, I'm still waiting for a gay guy to hit on me, although I got to tell you, the sun is setting on that. I'm not getting any better looking.
Well, as somebody who has gone over to a dude's house and between me and the door, whipped his dick out and started going at it, it is super terrifying humiliating.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You went to dude's house.
Yeah. That I had met in an acting class.
He got the dork out.
Yeah. He was in, he said we were
going
to
We were on our way to Bakersfield and we'd make more sense to carpool.
Let me tell you about
I was in La Cañada.
Let me tell you about dudes you meet in acting class.
You don't have to now, but I would have loved this 10 years ago.
Dear old Gina. Dear former Gina.
It's like there's two categories. There's I'm gay and I'm your best friend.
I have him.
Or I'm going to beat off on you when we're camping.
I had both.
So it's that. It's not sensible in between heterosexual guy.
Nope.
Those that's supercharged sexually or gay.
Or my
or heterosexually best sexually
friend.
Or gay. But yeah. You don't really get in the acting class. You don't get the in-betweens.
You're absolutely right. He said, come to my house and we'll... I'll drive to dinner. And I went and he goes, come up for a second. Yeah, no problem. Hey, do you want a drink first? Yeah, sure. Great. Put my purse down away from the door. He stood in between me and the door.
Front door.
Yes. And it was a shitty apartment and God knows where. And whipped it out and started asking me if I thought it was hot and if I liked what he was doing. And in that moment, you don't get super honest. You just placate to get yourself out of that situation. So I'm thinking my purse is behind me. The door is in front of me. Oh, yeah, that's great. Kind of moving super glacially. Grab my purse. Don't even look down. Keep looking at him. You're great. I forgot something in my car. This is super hot, by the way. Keep doing it. And ran out the door and went home. That's what people don't understand.
Now, he got it out and just showed it to you?
He showed it to me. He was ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then kept asking me, but not really waiting for an answer if I was into what he got going on.
A young Michael J. Fox in the acting class with Gina Kratz.
You
got to
stay sharp, you know.
Who was this? Did the guy turn out to be anything? Did you ever see him pop up on a commercial or anything?
Never in a million years. He went by some fake Hawaiian name that he came up with. And I can tell you, because a lot of people have been asking me this on social media. And for me personally, it's not about, you know, name his name. But there's been so many of these. I have tons of these stories. Everybody does. It's about putting my energy into being as successful as possible and metaphorically just stepping on the necks of these assholes as far as I can go to be successful. They don't matter. They certainly don't. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was Israel Komakali.
Hey, Robert.
Yeah.
Sir.
I never look at anybody as doing anything to me. I just look at them as something's wrong with them.
But Adam, this is exactly what the victims say. This is women say.
I know.
So you understand?
Yeah.
We love you, and you're
so
a victim.
I'm so glad you heard me, Robert.
Yeah.
Important. Oh, yes. Oh,
no, I know.
Gina.
Listen.
That was a fantastic reveal.
Listen, somebody...
never mind. Jesus
there is
Christ.
A... Boy, I got
to
tell you.
Give him a break. He's headed down to the march. So.
Somebody tweeted me... A story about, shall I let my young black son be friends with white kids? And I was like, oh, my God, this is a conversation you're having with a 4-year-old.
No, obviously.
Right. There's one where the kid's 4 and he's having to explain Charlottesville or something there.
Give me a second.
Closer to the top. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. It's the first paragraph.
Just read it from the top.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting.
My oldest son, wrestling with a 4-year-old's happy struggles, is trying to clarify how many people can be his best friend. Quote, my best friends are you and mama and my brother. But even a child's joy is not immune to this ominous political period.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is when you're 4.
I was going to say, you can put that on him, I suppose, but otherwise, yeah.
It's pretty much a lot of choo-choo trains and dinosaurs and things when you're 4, but go ahead.
This summer's images of violence in Charlottesville, Virginia prompted an array of questions.
No, it didn't prompt an array of questions. First off, 4-year-olds are only interested in 4-year-olds themselves. They want to know they want a donut for breakfast. They want daddy to want to ride daddy like a horse. They want whatever all the time.
Yeah.
This is why, by the way, when you run into adults, that are immature. It's all about them. No, it doesn't prompt questions about world events. Nobody wants to know. Four-year-olds don't want to know anything outside of their world at all because it doesn't exist in their world and it doesn't affect them. It did not prompt questions about Charlottesville.
Right.
No four-year-old asked questions about it. Now, it's a form of abuse to expose your kids to that.
I was going
to
say.
Even if you sat them down in front of CNN 24/7, they still wouldn't have questions. And if they did,
it'd be, why are we doing this?
Why isn't this animated?
Right. And the answer would be, don't worry about it. It's never going to happen to you or moving on or whatever. You can shut up a four-year-old with a Nilla wafer. Mm. They don't dig.
Right.
They don't go deep on the questions.
Just follow up questions.
But anyway, prompted after it's always the same thing too. If they get these number, they have kids, and the number just couldn't work. 4-year-old can't work. This discussion we're having here could work with an 8 or 9 year old mm-hmm. or something. For fours, they're almost incoherent. Mm-hmm. They'll ask stupid questions, but it's me. I'm hungry. I'm this. I'm that. It's
right.
Not. Let's sit down and break down the game film, and then we'll break off into a discussion group. Just read that again. Just so you know, out of the gate, that this person is lying.
But even a child's joy is not immune to this ominous political period. This summer's images of violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, prompted an array of questions.
No, it prompted an array, like a bevy of questions.
Exactly. A myriad.
Unyielding.
From a four-year-old. From your four-year-old who's exposed to this how? But okay, go ahead.
Brought into the home. So this is how he offered lamely, quote unquote. Some people hate others because they are different. A childish but distinct panic enters his voice. But I'm not different. It is impossible to convey the mixture of heartbreak and fear I feel for him. Donald Trump's election has made it clear that I will teach my boys the lesson generations old, one that I, for the most part, nearly escaped. I will teach them to be cautious. I will teach them to be suspicious. And I will teach them to distrust.
Good. You'll have a whole new crop of little asshole douchebags running around. Teach your kid to be suspicious. That's awesome. So when he meets a red-haired kid on the schoolyard in 2 years, he can be suspicious. Not so fast, honky. What do you want from me?
You
want to
shake my hand, huh?
Oh, it's child abuse. It's child abuse. It's child abuse. Please, everyone who works for this paper, who never stops talking about it takes a village and children are our future, and want free lunches and free breakfast, how about poisoning your kid's fucking brain? How about that for child abuse? You pussies who claim to care about kids, and more kids. How about this? I would much rather my kid not get a free lunch at school, then have somebody poison them with these kinds of thoughts. Their society. All right, sorry. Keep reading. What an asshole. What's this guy's name?
Ikao Yanka, I believe.
Yeah, all right. Ikao Yanka's a douche.
Much sooner than I thought I would, I will have to discuss with my boys whether they can truly be friends with white people.
All right.
I got it.
It's a good discussion. Yeah. Good positive discussion. It's a good one.
You're 5 years old. You're a man now. It's time to have the talk.
Yeah. All right.
Should I jump to the next
one? They can be friends with white people. Yeah. All right. Did anyone ever think that possibly maybe a racist thought to have?
I was going
to
say, imagine it the other way around.
Oh, yeah.
Keep going or skip to the juicy highlight.
What's the juicy highlight?
Let's see. As against our gauzy national hopes, I will teach my boys to have profound doubts that friendship with white people is even possible. When they ask, I will teach my sons that their beautiful hue is a fault line. Spare me platitudes of how we are all the same on the inside. I have to keep my boys safe, and so I will teach them before the world shows them this particular brand of rending, world shows them this particular brand of rending, violent, often fatal betrayal.
Often fatal.
Yeah.
Look, if you're statistically worried about your kids and their skin color, teach them about other kids with the same skin color have guns. Statistically, that's who's going to shoot them. Asshole. This guy's an asshole. Now, look, I don't mind that this guy's a fucking idiot. I mind that there's a home for him at the New York Times. They should read this and go, get this shit out of here. It's fucking nonsense. And by the way, I guarantee this guy went to some college, got some law degree, and is enjoying his life surrounded by the blue-eyed devil.
Would you like to hear the last sentence?
Sure.
Because it's very condescending.
Okay. I like condescending.
All right. In the coming years, when my boys ask again their question about who they can be best friends with.
What? In the coming years?
Yeah.
like in their early 30s? Yeah. Hey, Dad.
I'm really working on this best friend thing.
Yeah, I remember when I talked to my dad. I remember when I had an initial conversation with my dad about who I could be friends with when I was 4. And then later on, I think it was in the 7th grade. And then later on, I was 7 years out of high school. Right. I've never had any discussions with my dad about who I can be best friends with. I went to school. I met like-minded guys who like sports or whatever, right, bicycles, and we ended up hanging out.
Yeah.
Yes.
You never passed it through Mr. Corolla.
No. Corolla.
Corolla.
Oh, excuse me. In the coming years, my boys ask again their question of who they can be best friends with. I pray for a more hopeful answer.
What a douche. What a douchebag. What a colossal, narcissistic douchebag. Have fun poisoning your kids, Dick. All right. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. And New York Times, please be a little more responsible with what the shit you publish, mm-hmm, would you? Just like doing is freaking everyone out. All right. Let's see. We got the blah, blah, blog. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. Let me tell you about get ready with blah, blah, blog. Get ready with stamps.com, man. We use it here for all our shipping. And it's around the holidays, and we do a lot of shipping over here. We do some receiving, mostly shipping. Lots of books and autographs and things like that. You can buy and print U.S. postage. Any letter, any package, any class, do a write-off of your computer printer. They'll even send you a digital scale to automatically calculate the exact postage. And right now, you can enjoy Stamps.com with a special 4-week trial plus postage and the digital scale without long-term commitments. This is the way to go, people. Again, it's the holidays. Let's not go. You guys have friends all over the place. You have packages and stuff you want to send around. Let's not go to the post office and wait in line. Go to stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Adam. That is stamps.com. Enter Adam. Get the scale. Get the postage. No commitment. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. All right. Let's see. How are we doing on time? You got news? How are you doing
of course,
with news?
Yeah.
All right. I'll tell you what. Let's do a little good sports, and we'll come back and do the news right after this.
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to Podcast One Sports presentation of Good Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carolla there. The dawn of another sports week is upon us. How are you, Ace?
I'm well.
What a pleasure to see you once again. As always.
Always a delight.
Listen, the feedback has been grand. We appreciate it. Keep it coming. Hashtag good sports. Drop us a line. Things you want me and Ace to buzz about. We shall accommodate that to the greatest of our ability. And by the way, if you want to hear more football talk, go listen to the Dave Damashek football program. Also available on iTunes. And Ike Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, Matt Money-Smith, and the rest of the gang. Always there. And now let's kibitz about something. Ace, that we're in right in the midst of a football season. We're getting to the rivalry games in college football. It has me ruminating about fight songs, and you know, that's one place for certain that college football has it over the NFL. But the NFL does have some fight songs. I thought it would be fun to go through some of those and have you rank them out.
Yeah, look, I always think about the Houston Oilers, and when you do the kind of Houston Oiler, Houston Oilers,
number one,
it's not a song. It's like in the 80s when white guys would rap and go, my name is Adam and I'm here to say,
right,
I approached a mic in a particular way. You know, it's not, you can't do that.
Well, when you start talking white man's rap.
Houston Oilers.
Oh, we got you going a little Love You Blue, are you? Mm-hmm. This is what they would do in the Astrodome.
Here's what I'm saying. I honestly feel this way. I feel this way about all art. All art. Music, paintings, automotive design, everything. If I could do it, it's worthless. And I could do this. I could write the Houston Oilers song.
Well, but you know what's the craziest thing about that is? Because I've investigated this exact song. Love You Blue. That was, you know, the Houston Oilers with Bum Phillips. And by the way, is there ever been anything more distinctive? And that pro football could use a little bit. Sports in general could use a little bit of Bum Phillips right now. With he was the head coach of an NFL team, and he would stand out there in a 10-gallon hat and cowboy boots. That was great.
And you know what's great, too? In a world where, in that era, a lot of coaches were wearing cleats or shoes that were meant. Right too, yeah. So he's coming from an era in the 70s. You look at pictures of, you know, George Allen in the 70s. He's wearing the same shoes the guys on the field are wearing.
Yeah, right.
The coaches saw fit to wear like turf shoes or cleats or whatever it is. They would wear them just the same as the players did. He is wearing the opposite of a shoe you could play in. Probably a cowboy boot, even further than a flip flop away from something you could compete in.
It's true. We have a lot of, and that was a better day because I'm all for distinction. I like in the NFL now that that the 32 teams aren't running the identical offense as each other.
Right.
College football is now all running the spread. So that's something the NFL now has over. But yes, the variation in outfits worn by head coaches back in the day is superior because now everybody just wears the team
colors.
They
have to wear the swag.
Right. Now, but back then you had Tom Landry wearing a sports jacket and a fedora out there. You had Chaz Knoll wearing like 70s version of like warm-up clothes. He was sort of like the precursor to Bill Belichick. And then you had the cowboy hatted Bum Phillips. But what's fun about that Love You Blue song is you think that's worthless? How about this, Ace? They stole it from the Miami Dolphins. It's the exact same thing.
Oh, no.
See if you can find that one, Gary, the Miami Dolphins, because we're the Miami Dolphins. It's the exact same song.
Yes, we are.
They stole the same thing.
Is
this it?
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest.
Yeah.
What the hell? You can't just take their song.
There's like kind of three genres of songs back then, and everyone's like, we took a little bacon and we took a little beans and we fought the bloody British in the town of New Orleans. Everyone's like, huh, 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 huh. That's how white people used to sing. That's how.
I like, by the way, you said like, that's like 80s white guys rapping. It sounds like the same. Well, by the way, the Chicago Bears, don't forget they had the Super Bowl shuffle too. That was white guys.
Low bridge, everybody down. Low bridge, cause we're coming to a town. And you always know your neighbor. You always know your pal. When you're ever navigating on the Erie Canal. It's like a it's like a dog that just went for a run.
All right. I've boiled it down to the
hold on. Can I ask you this, though, Sheck?
You can ask me whatever you please.
We know you and your Pittsburgh Pirates with the We Are Family.
Mm-hmm.
This is adopting songs. Me and my Rams ain't no stopping us now after shortly before your Pittsburgh Steelers stopped them in the Super Bowl. That was their song. What's worse, a horrible song that you concoct or a bad song that you graft onto your team?
I don't know. I guess that depends on the particulars. If you choose a cool song, that would be great. I think it's crazy, and this makes me a pariah on the banks of the Three Rivers, but in the second half, you may notice when the Steelers are playing in Heinz Field, somewhere in the second half, you will hear the national broadcast. You'll hear some notes and say, I know that song, and it sticks. They play the Sticks song, Renegade.
Oh.
And it sounds, actually, Renegade starts okay, but then once it gets into the actual lyrics and stuff, it turns into a stick song, aka a bad song. And how can you be the Pittsburgh Steelers and not come, and it's to get the defense rallied, and the players love it, which is weird too. Like Ike Taylor, I've asked him, I said, isn't that embarrassing that Renegade, he's like, Sheck, it pumps up the team. We all feel it. I'm like, really? Renegade by Sticks is what gets you guys bumped up.
I'm a wanted man. It's a weird thing that in the 70s and the early 80s, everyone had to write a song about the Old West and being like, was there? Here's where I'm curious about these songs. Are there proclamations? Like when somebody goes in 1977, look, I'm going to write a 133rd song about what it's like to be a rambling guy. And then somebody jumps in and goes, hold on, we're not doing that anymore. And then the next guy goes, wait a minute, what's going on? Oh, you want to do another gypsy cat lady, gypsy evil devil woman?
You're so right.
And you go, no.
Why is that a flavor that musicians all enjoyed? It was the singing about 19th century old West.
I know. Hey, look at everyone in their spandex with their teased hair. Nobody loves nostalgia in the old West like these guys.
I have my finger on the pulse of what 1985 America is going to get excited about. It's the old West.
The thing that always cracked me up is, you know how stuff with time becomes it becomes the folklore and funny and tales and stuff. When I was a kid, there was a Time Life series. The Time Life was, you could buy these books. They do them like on the Civil War, you know, back when you would buy a volume of books, and they do the old West. And the thing was always funny to go and simulated hand-tooled vinyl leather, you know, like a weird, they were all bound and
yeah,
whatever.
That's so right, yeah.
And they'd go, but they do these things where they'd go, Pecos Bob, he was so mean, he once shot a man just for snoring. And they were laughing about it. Like, how would you feel? Obviously, you had a pre-existing relationship. You were camping, you know, you're out bivouacking together. You're on the run from the law, or you're robbing a bank or a stagecoach. But at some point, you had to then get out your bedroll and go to bed. And if Pecos Bill shot you for snoring, I feel like that's not a good dude. It's not a funny story. You know what I mean? Not funny for the family of the guy who was killed in his sleep. And he just shot a man.
A charming character from the old West. Don't you want to know more?
And then in terms of...
I killed a guy.
Snoring. Murdering. Kill it.
You know what's a funny thing about that, too, is also in the 80s, with the rise of Miami Vice, one of your favorites from the Eagles, Glenn Frey, decides to forge a solo career built apparently all around drug trafficking. Smuggler's Blues.
Smuggler's Blues.
What do you care about that, Glenn Frey? What do you care about who's moving the most kilos of coke?
But it was kind of a schoolhouse rock. Drug addicts, because like when I have to think about how to spell things or how a bill works or what a conjunction is, I have to think of the song. What's your function? Putting together words.
You're right.
And if you do, like, they take it from Honduras and they move it through Miami and then they bring it through Miami and then they move it to LA and stuff. I remember as a young man thinking, oh, this is how the drug
right, the
work.
ABCs of drug trafficking.
I had it coming in from Canada. I was all wrong until he wrote the song.
See, and that's why you've been able to avoid the pokey this far. Glenn Frey showed you that,
right.
and your booming cocaine trade. All right, very good. See, we barely even got into the football stuff. We're going to have to kick it to tomorrow, Ace. Good news.
I'll be here.
We're going to be back tomorrow with our NFL fight song review for you. For now, though, for Adam Carolla, Podcast One Sports presentation of Good Sports out.
Do you want to be great at reading body language, developing persuasion and influence, as well as master rapport and social interaction? What if I told you that you would learn from top performers like NBA superstar Shaquille O'Neal, former CIA director Michael Hayden, and brilliant thinkers like Dirty Jobs' Mike Rowe? Take a minute right now and subscribe to the Art of Charm podcast with me, Jordan Harbinger, and you'll hear how I pull out the secret psychology, life experience, and wisdom that can only be learned from them. You'll hear Shaq talk about how to manage your career and how to know who to trust when everyone's out to get something from you. You'll discover how to think critically from Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson, and even how Tony Hawk's life as a skateboard icon will influence how you think about your career and relationships in a whole new way. This show is for you if you want to outcompete, outperform, and outthink everyone around you, and it's the only place you'll get practical, applicable strategies from every single episode. Since you're all about learning from the absolute best, download and subscribe for free right now and upgrade your brain 4 times a week at podcastone.com or in the Podcast One app.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail. What's up, Ace? I've got one for your bucket list. Cracking a safe with nothing but a stethoscope. Love you guys. Keep getting it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Best second story man in the business.
That's a good one.
What would you rather be? Best second story man or best wheel man? I feel like now wheel man. Maybe in the '40s it would have been second story man, but now glamorous.
Especially for Baby Driver. Yeah. That's sweet.
Oh, yeah. So weird, there's been a slew of movies about outwitting and outdriving and outmaneuvering police in 2015, 16, 17, or in the 2000s, meaning there was a whole lot of Bonnie and Clyde stuff going on in the 30s and 40s and 50s. It was easy. It's like once you got to the dirt road, you just shut your headlights off and they couldn't tell where you were. And then there was a lot of crossing into this Indian territory or
different
crossing
county.
The border into a new county. And the sheriffs have to stop right on the border and shake their fist. And like at the time, it was like, oh, it's kind of feasible. Like this guy's out driving this guy and he got to the border first or whatever it is. At a certain point, they invented helicopters and radios, and then the whole genre got blown up because everyone went, hey, in 1989, you can't outrun somebody in a Camaro. They got a radio and they got a helicopter. What are you going to do? And now it's all back.
Yeah.
All the base.
Yeah, precision
just
driving.
On the skill of the driver.
Yeah.
We're back.
We're back. That's a good thing. All right. Shall we do a little news, Gina Grant?
Let's do it.
Give me the news with Grant. News with Gina Grant. Breaking viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, the UCLA men's basketball team arrived at Los Angeles International Airport Saturday night, but they were three players short as three remained on house arrest in China, according to ABC 7 News. The team had gone to China to play against Georgia Tech for their season opener. They beat them on Friday night. But before the game, as you know, three of the players, including LiAngelo Ball, were arrested on suspicion of shoplifting from a high-end shopping center there. Sources told ESPN that Ball, Cody Riley, and Jalen Hill could remain in China for another week or two. The source also said there's surveillance video that shows the player allegedly shoplifting from three stores. So this is long from over. I know they've called in help from the owner of Alibaba, that international kind of Amazon, trying to help them out in some way. And somebody else
Wait,
as well.
How's that guy help out?
I don't know. I think he's Chinese. And I think he's going to hopefully, you know, do some diplomacy with them. But so far, the kids did not come home.
Jesus Christ, whatever China and North Korea and many other places, like, I feel like we just need to, it's sort of like the metric system, like, or English is the universal language for air traffic controllers. There's just a reason.
Yeah.
You have to just pick a language at a certain point. And if you want to be an air traffic controller and you want to live in parts unknown, you're just going to have to speak enough English to bring in that 737. We can't just do all, you know, I mean, I don't know. I feel the same way about, like, you know, age of consent, age of whatever. It's just, can we just start standardizing things? And globally, can we just kind of figure out, like, look, have your customs, have your dishes, have your ceremonial dances, have your stuff like that. But the other guy got caught stealing, we got to cut his hand off. Or this guy got caught with another man, we got to put him in a potato sack and throw him off a building. Can we just agree on some of those bigger things? It's just sort of basic, you know, all right, no one's a fan of shoplifting. I agree these guys should get in a little trouble, maybe a little financial situation, and someone's got to cut someone a check or do something. But this part where You're brought here, you're accused of this, you're locked up for that, or you're not allowed to go home with the team or whatever. I don't know. It's like sort of what year is it, and when are we just going to villagize, globalize? Like, we're so global now. We're so global. Why all these insane differences? And, you know, it's kind of like my Ten Commandments thought, which is, there's a lot of people have, you know, one of my, my only real sort of fundamental disagreement with Dennis Prager, who's a very religious guy, sort of like, hey, religion, we need religion. It teaches people how to be moral. It's like, I know not to kill. I know not. Yeah, well, you do. But what about other people? They know too. Sure. It's in us.
Yeah.
It's in us. And the right way to treat other human beings, it's dictated by nature and the sky. It's not something, well, you guys have your version of justice, and then we have our own take on it over here. It's pretty basic. Mm-hmm. Like, I think most sane nations have a pretty good understanding of, all right, let's just, the taking of another human. The taking of another human. We have, and if Mark Garagus is here, he'd fill this in, but, you know, we have manslaughter, we have involuntary manslaughter, which the person was driving in my car, they weren't wearing their seatbelt, perhaps I should have told them to put their seatbelt on, I was drinking, I love this person, was my best friend, now they're dead, you know, it's fine. Then there's manslaughter, then there's murder, and there's murder one, and there's murder two, and there's all with circumstances and everything else. And then at the very top of the food chain, there's basically laying in wait and assassinating a dignitary. And for that, you get the death penalty. The bottom of involuntary whatever, if you led a pretty good life, there wasn't a history of you killing passengers in your car or multiple DUIs or whatever it is, the bottom of the food chain is zero time. A bunch of community, whatever classes, and voluntary this and that, and a fine, and a restitution, and whatever, and probably not even time served, just a non... I think there's a version of you killing another human being, I'm sure there is, that involves you never seeing the inside of a prison cell, ever. And then there's one that involves you going to a gas chamber in Texas and being executed. Mm-hmm. So, which is it? Well, we're able to decide. I think
there's a whole spectrum.
Yeah, we sort of go, one time he didn't mean it. So that was another time he was waiting on top of the roof with a machete. Okay. Now, let's just do that with everything and get on with our goddamn lives. And then I don't feel like that's a cultural thing or a geographical thing. That's just a human. We're humans. We can agree on this.
Yeah. And then the extreme exceptions sort of prove the rule again.
Right. So knock it off, China. Here's what I'd like out of you, China. A little less China.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Just dial it. Put a little flour in that China stew.
Thin it out.
Mm. Or thicken it up. Yeah. Or do something. But what I'm saying is it's like
diluted.
A little less of whatever you were 50 years ago and a little more of pick Finland.
Right.
Or go ahead. Yeah. Let's get a little more progressive here.
Dash, yeah.
Not everyone needs to hang out. You know, you don't have to be in house arrest. Right. A couple of ballers, pardon the pun, wanted to help themselves to Gucci sunglasses. Yeah. Yes.
But Gary said, by the way, the team had visited Alibaba headquarters the day before the theft. So maybe they became very quick friends with that man. Well, with accusations against men like Louis C.K. and Harvey Weinstein, the question of why some men feel the urge to masturbate in front of women in a professionally connected setting has come up a lot. It's been a big question. The scientific literature doesn't say much about this particular kind of behavior. This, according to CNN, it does, however, address exhibitionist disorder, as they call it. Someone acts on an urge to display, fondle, or stimulate themselves in front of a stranger. The disorder is one of the paraphiles defined by science as a, quote, recurrent, intense, sexually arousing fantasies, urges, or behaviors that are distressing or disabling and that involve inanimate objects, children, or non-consenting adults, or suffering or humiliation of oneself or the partner with the potential cause of harm. So,
can we agree that you masturbating in front of an underling, whether it's a comedian who's opening for you and you're the headliner, or the secretary, not in a dignified manner on a pod, on a cross-continental flight with mom and dad.
I'm just saying, I hope we have adjoining rooms.
No, what Gary did was courageous compared to what these guys did. He was in a pod. He cordoned himself off.
He's your underling. This is where you take the
heat. That's right.
This
is where
you take the heat.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Not helpful.
I think you have to be an asshole. I don't think you have to be an... We do a few things. Guys are horny. Guys are always horny. Women are beautiful. Guys are attracted to that. It's you driving on a road trip and you start smelling barbecue and you see a big sign. You know, you see a big sign off the road that says Great Wood Pit, you know, barbecued, whatever. And, baby back ribs, and then you go, no, let's keep driving till we find some jicama and stream water. And you go, I can't. It's taking over. Yeah. It's taking over.
The tractor beam has caught you.
I'm starting to salivate. Look, when guys, married, kids, whatever their position, whatever it is, when the beautiful knockout 23-year-old secretary comes onto the job for her first day, they all react the same way. It's the barbecue thing. Now, you should know you're on a diet and you have high blood pressure and your wife's allergic to, you know, hickory. So keep driving. But we all feel it. It's all the same thing.
What Adam's saying is we look at you as meat.
Yeah, you're smoked meat.
We do. We cannot do it. So that's a universal thought. The I got to beat off in front of you is not.
Right.
That's nothing in it for me kind of thing, except for I'm in charge. I'm definitely in charge of this relationship. Whoever's got their dork out and is slapping it, it's the person who's the alpha in this relationship. If anyone walks in and one guy's beating off and the other person is in the fetal position, guess who's in charge of that relationship?
Guess who's, running the meeting.
If Brian and I are formally alone in an office and you just happen to come in to change like the copier toner and I'm in a fetal position yelling, please stop, and Brian's over me feverishly pounding his meat, he is in charge of our relationship. He is the alpha. You don't need to ask for ID. Right. We don't need to see.
No follow-up questions.
Pay stubs. Yeah. Unnecessary. He's in charge. That's how it works. So I do wonder, like some of these guys.
Get back to this example.
Cosby. Weinstein's a colossal prick. Like he's a fucking douchebag.
Yeah.
Louis a little prickly too. I've always heard that Cosby was a serious prickly douche to like any. I mean,
Eddie Murphy was in his stand up act. What an asshole he was in Raw.
I mean, like when James David L. Dixon was like a junior agent at like 24, like he attended like something where Cosby was or something, and Cosby's like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" And he's like, "I'm just." I'm with William Morris. Well, get the fuck out of here. You're not supposed to be here. Like, your biggest nightmare when someone goes, I'm going to go meet this person, like, come with me. That's singled out, like, thrown out or whatever. He's like, he's a douche. Weinstein, douche, for sure. I mean, Weinstein, colossal prick. Cosby, yes. Suke, probably a little prickly. O'Reilly, prickly guy. Like, I'm wondering if... Now, look, there's plenty of instances of nice guy trying to get into pants and crossing line, but that's nice horny guy who's just can't pass the barbecue place. This is something else.
Yeah.
I wonder if the theme is kind of douchebag dudes because it's a power douche move.
Along those lines, I never thought I'd be trying to get inside the mind of the guy who does this, but I wonder if the desired outcome is not to have the girl go, "Oh wow, that's pretty hot. Let me, you know, I'm into that."
No.
The outcome is like, "Oh my," like shock and horror and taken aback. I think to shock and to put off balance, I think that's the goal.
Well, disorient.
It's a kind of a
make
ultimate version of me going, "Why don't you just get down and give me 10 push-ups?" And you go, "I'm the secretary." And you go, "Just do them."
And what?
Because I'm in charge. Like, it's the ultimate. You're just going to sit there. I'm going to beat off. You're going to be quiet. And there's definitely a sexual component to it, but there's a big-time power douchey component to it as well. Yeah. And I would be interested, as the names start filing out and what the acts were, I'd be interested if there was, you know, like I said, you're not going to hear Henry Winkler's name. And if you do, it'll be the kind of Dustin Hoffman thing where they're on set and he was making suggestions and this, that, and the other, but nothing in it for me.
Right.
I'm going to beat off while you watch. Like the,
I'll have
not
a hard-boiled egg and a soft-boiled clitoris.
That's right. Yeah. Not the douche in front of you move.
Well, you know who the newest name is, which is getting some people to go, "Really? Come on." Is George Takei.
Oh.
Well, Takei's interesting. Somebody did this. The guy he met, also the guys, like, I don't know why we expect a little more out of guys, but I just do expect a little more guy. Like when the gay guy goes, "Come back, have a drink, sit down, loosen up your belt." Like, you know, it's probably
take a while.
Probably going somewhere. But, and I agree, like we're finding everyone. That guy said he passed out after he had a few drinks
and
woke up and his pants were around his ankles.
On a beanbag chair.
On a beanbag chair. And George was diddling him. It's just every. Well, here's my thought on that. At least it's something. We're getting a lot of. He put his hand on my thigh, like underneath the dinner table, and I swat his hand away. Like I the hand on the thigh stuff. I know everyone's like, okay, any unwanted physical, any unwanted physical. They're all no, they're not all the same. There's woke up with your pants around your ankles and hand on the thigh. It's a. There's a pretty easy thing you can use. Like it's a thing. Like, hey, how much should we tip? Oh, take the sales tax and double it. Okay, here's your rule for that. You have a daughter. If I gave you a choice between hand on the thigh or George Bush's hand sliding down, pinching the buns versus woke up with the pants around the ankles or beat off into a potted plant or drugged and woke up with the cause going downstairs. This is your daughter. Do you just go, well, it doesn't matter because it's all sexual assault, I'm leaving the room? Or do you have very distinct thoughts about which event you'd
obvious.
Like to happen to your daughter? And if the answer is yes, you'd have very specific thoughts, then you're a fucking hypocrite. Because then there is a difference, and we need to have just like murder one all the way down to the involuntary manslaughter.
If you don't have specific thoughts, I don't want you to be my dad.
Nobody. There's not a human being that doesn't have thoughts. Right. There's not a human being who announced that every unwanted advance, every contact, every everything is just assault. There's not one human being that has those feelings that has no thoughts on it as it would pertain to their daughter. Now, as it pertains to Twitter, they're heroes. Yes. All right. Let me tell you about True Car. I got thoughts on True Car. Oh, man. True Car. You want to go new? You want to go used? How about over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles from over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide? Whether you're looking to go new or used, it's all there. You get the upfront pricing, you get the info, you get the discounts off the list price, and a better buying experience to see what other people's paid for your car. Your exact car, apples, apples. You find out exactly what you want. Do you want that Jag, the inline six, with the triple side draft McCoonies, 45s, maybe 50s? Or do you want the V8 with the twin turbocharger on there? There's a difference. You figure it out. You lock it in. You hit your local certified dealer. Enjoy a quick and easy buying experience. When you're ready to buy new or used, you visit True Car. That is True Car, just the best. Some features not available in all states. All right, let's do one more.
All right. Well, Elton John, and he is notorious for this, by the way. He stopped his concert dead in his tracks on Saturday night after his piano failed, according to TMZ. Seems that John was pissed when the instrument seemed to freeze up during his hit Philadelphia Freedom. Elton dropped an F-bomb or two. The crowd at Ford Center in Evansville loved it in Indiana. Elton wasn't going to budge until the problem was fixed, by the way, and with help of a tech who tinkered for around 10 minutes. The piano was back on track. The show went on. Here's a clip halfway through the show. And again, I've heard this happens often at Elton concerts.
Gary's parents were there.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
Gary.
Oh, I can't play everybody.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead and play it. Go ahead.
It's not sounding right. I don't want you to have anything but 100% perfection here. Okay?
He's been yelling for a while.
Okay. Let's try that one. Just use the normal piano sound, for Christ's sake.
And?
You got something else?
No. Come on, fix this, for fuck's sake.
He gets so angry.
He's great. He's great. Because I think he started off angry. Then he went gay. Then he became a billionaire.
That's supercharged.
That's creatine, man.
But
giving gay doesn't make you angry. It gives you license to be bitchy.
Right.
No one really cares. Like, oh, come on. It's Elton. He's bitchy.
And if you're in the crowd, which I would assume Gary's parents feel this way, you love that shit when he stops down in the middle and says, I want to give you nothing but the best. Fuck this piano.
Anything that's real, the crowd loves. And I'm sure at a certain point, you got to think the piano is pretty intricate. Very intricate. And he's pounding, he's doing crocodile rock and like pounding away on that thing for hours at a time. Like stuff can just get a little out of tune, out of whack.
Dawson, is he playing something other than a piano, like a key, like electric keyboard, or is that just straight piano?
I can't really tell from there, but I would say it's just a piano.
Looks like he's just playing the Steinway up there. And Yeah, it's amazing how much it this playing of the piano, you know, you think of these things that people can do, like you sort of hope for your kids, like, oh, I hope he's a great football player in high school. Yeah, that's good, but at the best case scenario, age 31 and a half, you are done right. and done. And that is the best.
Tight
that is
window.
The best. Right. This playing the piano, playing the bass guitar, anything, like just being a band, you can just do it and do it and do it. The Rolling Stones, they don't sound any different now than they did in the 60s. They can just still get that payday. Yep. There's no problem whatsoever.
And if you're not the Rolling Stones, you can just tinkle the ivories. It's, you're the head of the party. You're the head of every party you go to.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
You guys ever seen Elton John in concert?
No.
No.
Great.
We're missing out?
Yeah, it's really, really great.
A+.
I would love to. I would love to, because it's also one of the, it's nothing but hits.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. At this point, yeah, he's not promoting a new album or anything.
Right.
All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Ikao Yanka?
Gina
Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Douchey Doucherson. All right, you've heard me talk about Onnit. We love Onnit. O-N-N-I-T. Amazing supplements like Alpha Brain Buffalo, Meat Warrior Bars. That's the best. MCT oil. Dr. Drew loves the MCT, man. Take a hit off it right off the jug. Well, it's a little jar, but I take a hit off it before I leave the house every day. Onnit CEO Aubrey Marcus, he did a Take a Knee. We walked through his life, being a college athlete, turning that into a multi-million dollar brand, health brand, and Aubrey's experience with ayahuasca. Let you listen to a little snippet now.
You know, I had an experience. It was about the 10th time where ayahuasca took me down this path where it was like, you know what? Not only you're going to die, it's that you never mattered. It's like, mm-hmm. you're nothing. You're the gum on nothing's shoe. You're water borrowed from the ocean and the ocean forgot. You're completely worthless. And so I had to surrender. Like, even in my death, I had some idea like, well, I lived well. I'll leave a legacy. Some people will remember me. I was like, nah, bitch, you're nothing.
So they filmed the whole thing. You watch the entire podcast and behind the scenes mini doc. You watch it free at onnit.com/Adam. Onnit.com/Adam. While you're there, get 10% off your entire order. Great supplements, great everything. They have everything there for health and well-being, man. Let's be well. onnit.com/Adam. All right, Tuesday, the 21st, Pasadena Ice House will be there. Mark Garagos is going to be there. Brad Williams is going to be there. This is too much show for you. You better hurry up. The pre-cruise Corolla drink event, that is Wednesday, November 29th, Churchill's Pub, Miami, 8 o'clock for everyone who's going on the cruise and anyone who's in the Miami area. Loxie's going to be playing there. Mike Dawson's going to be playing there.
Lynette's going to be there.
Going to be there. I didn't know Lynette was going to be there.
What?
Go to chassis.com and check out. Go to Corolla Drinks.
Oh, no, Chassis playing for it, actually. Chassis paying for it.
Yeah.
Chassis
so you're good. You're in the clear.
Two S's and a Y. Lots of good stuff over there. And until next time, Adam Carolla for Gina Grad and Paul Bryan saying mahalo. I'm going to beat off on you when we're camping.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Come out to the show in Pasadena. It'll be the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Get tickets for that and everything else that is awesome at adamcarolla.com.